There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome back to the show. You listen to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from a toasty Barasti down here at Le Meridien Mina Sillahi. All sorts of developments going on down here at Barasti, as they are around the city and, of course, within the sports infrastructure here, which we'll address in just a few moments' time. Let's just go over to Twickenham very quickly and see what the latest scores are from the latest... is this the last? It must be the last leg.
Yeah, this is the last leg before, of course, the World Cup happening in San Francisco in July. Oh, yeah, Sevens World
Tough
Cup.
Tough gig, that one, eh?
Yeah, so looking very forward to that, Tom. But what I can tell you, the biggest surprise of the tournament is Russia beating the Samoans, and quite convincingly. That score was 29 points to 17. The South Africans are now in play against Canada. It's a halftime score of 7-0 to South Africa. And as I said, Spain taking on Ireland next, Australia take on Wales, and then New Zealand take on Argentina.
That's the latest from the HSBC World Series Rugby Sevens. We've had the rugby, haven't we? That one came to a conclusion. We've just had the third and final Super Rugby game of the day. A reminder of the result there.
Yeah, Tom, I tell you what, quite a close one in the end there, but the Waratahs beating their Brisbane neighbours, if we can call it as such, the Reds 52 points to 41. The Crusaders beat the Chiefs 34-20. And, of course, the Blues' dismal season continues without Sonny Bill Williams today. They lost to the Rebels 20 points to 10.
We will focus more on the French Open from Roland Garros a little later on. It is Saturday. Let's just get some more results. We've got both the boys looking at the results here. Let's start with you, Ross Christ. What have you seen?
Yeah, I'll stay on the women's side of things, and I'll let Carl handle the men's side of things. So in the second set, 28 seed Maria Sharapova, she won her first set 6-2 over Caroline Pliskova. In the second set, she's up 2-1 in these games. American Sloane Stephens defeated her counterpart Camelia Gorgi 4-6, 6-1, 8-6. So you had a belter there. Went to three sets and went to the second game there. Then Gabrielle Muguruza, won 6-6 love against Samantha Storer, winning 6-2. Man, these names are killing me today, Tommy.
That Gabi Muguruza result has upset a certain CVR. Sad to see her go.
I'm always sad to see her go, but at least Sharapova is still flying the flag for me, so I hope that she can get through. Just moving on to the men's draw, Tom, of course, the big one that everybody's looking forward to is this afternoon at 4:30, Rafael Nadal, the defending champion, taking on Gasquet, but currently live, Zverev, one of the young and upcoming favorites. He's up against the 6-seed Kevin Anderson. Kevin Anderson has taken the first set 6-1. Zverev is 2-1 up in the second set, but of course, that is going on serve. Then we've got the 18-seed Fognini taking on Carl Emmer from the UK.
Great game, this one. Look at that.
Absolutely. 6-3, 6-4, 6-3, 6-4, and it's 0-0 in the final set. 30 all, and they're going on serve over there. One other live game at the moment is we've got Schwartzman from Argentina taking on Kuric from Croatia. It is 1-1 there in the first set.
Yeah, that's over on the main court, the first game between the 18th and 16th seed. Fognini, the hot-headed Italian, who's always very entertaining to watch. He's the 18th seed against Kyle Edmund, who's currently the 16th seed, and of course, rising up the ranks very, very rapidly at the moment. Two sets all in that one, in this, the third round. That's one's gone to a fifth set of this year's French Open at Roland Garros. We'll have more on that one for you a little later on. One lady who loves her tennis and is instrumental in the success of tennis here in Dubai and has been for several seasons now is Sarah March. She joins us live now down here at The Grill, live from Barasti. Good afternoon to you.
Hello.
Roland Garros, lovely, isn't it? It's so good to watch.
I did feel for Ross then, though, trying to pronounce some of those
names.
There
are some crackers, aren't there?
Some of those Eastern European girls, I'll tell you what, they just keep adding syllables to their last name, don't they?
You just need to wait till you're commentating on Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova.
Oh, gosh.
She's practiced that one.
Yeah.
I have, to be fair.
Sarah, as I mentioned, you are very much involved in the tennis here, as you are racket sports in general, and we are just a few days away from the start of the latest big event to hit the shores of the UAE. And for all squash fans, it is back. It's the ATKO PSA Dubai World Series Finals. I understand that some of the world's best have already started to arrive. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. Yes, I'm changing hats from tennis to squash this week, and I'm very excited about the event coming up. This is the World Series Finals. So the players have played seven events around the world in the 2017-18 season, and only the top eight qualify. So we are seeing what is the equivalent of the final rounds of a world championships here. And it's just fabulous. We've got eight men and eight women coming in, and it all kicks off on Tuesday.
So in terms of who qualifies for the World Series final, this is not necessarily the top eight seeds in the world, or the top eight world rankings in the world. It's dependent on who wins the series in the lead up to.
Yep, that's right. Although, having said that, it is nearly all the top eight world ranked as well. But certainly we've got both world number ones here, Mohamed Al-Shabagi and Noor El-Shabini, the incredible Egyptians. So, yeah, we do have a few that go down a bit further, but it's really they've got to be top eight over those seven qualifying events.
Talk to me about the Egyptians. Not so much the history, because that went before and everything like that, but more about their dominance of the world of squash. It fascinates me as well. I mean, a country that is steeped in football heritage and sporting heritage in many ways, but what sets them apart when it comes to squash?
Well, everyone's trying to put their finger on that. It was a bit like the Chinese with diving. What are they doing right? I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that their previous leader, Mubarak, was a huge squash fan, okay. So it made sure there was a lot of squash courts built in Egypt. I've also seen some reports that said that what they have done with their clubs is get their top players still have to play the lower-ranked players, so they've really got that passing on of the knowledge going on very well. And then it's a thing of, like, you know, you get that kind of critical mass if you've got enough people who are playing really well that it brings up everyone in the country. It's a bit like, if I can say it, Australian swimming, things like that, where you've got
you
the good
that.
Players.
You can have that, yep, yep.
And it just, it raises the whole standard. They're just amazing, and we're going to see seven fantastic Egyptians here this week. Again, they'll be favourites.
And it's not just in the men's division. They've also dominated in the women's division.
Oh, no,
as well.
It's in both. Yeah, definitely. There's four Egyptian women. Let me just count. One, two, three. Yep, four Egyptian women. And we did have both El-Shabagi brothers. Unfortunately, Marwan has a hamstring injury, so he's had to withdraw. We still have Karim Abdel-Gawad, who was previous world champion. We have Tariq Momen, who's number five in the world. And, of course, Ali Farag, who's number two. And Mohamed El-Shabagi, who everyone would have seen last year, pull out an amazing win in the final. But there's still, you know, like, we've also got Nick Matthew, who's come in, which is fantastic because Nick is actually retiring this year. He's been three-time world champion, one of the best players the UK has ever produced.
Went at the Commonwealth as well, didn't he, as well, I think? Did he not? I think he might have done. I can't remember. I think off the top of my head. I'll double-check that one.
I'd have to check that one. Certainly in the women's, we've got the Commonwealth Games gold medalist, Joelle King from New Zealand, so that's pretty good. But, yeah, it's great to actually... I mean, it was a shame Marwan can't play, but great for the crowd to see Nick come back and for his actual final event to be playing here.
Action gets underway next week, is that right?
No, this week, Tuesday.
Tuesday,
yeah,
okay.
We start Tuesday and we have two sessions a day for the first 3 days. It's a round robin best of three series, so it's actually different from what they normally play. They normally play best of five. So you'll have four matches in the afternoon session, which starts at 3, and then four matches in the evening session starting at 8. So fantastic value for money. You see the best players in the world, and it's only 75 dirhams a day. I mean, again, you can't get much better than that. You can also come in. It's at the Emirates Golf Club this year, which will be very exciting. We're building a massive big tent and having a glass show court in there. And you can actually buy a deal where you get a discount on the iftar there. So you can come break your fast there and then come and watch some fantastic squash.
Tell us a little bit more about the new venue, which you guys, of course, last year I attended the one at the Dubai Opera. A lot of feedback from people is that maybe you were sitting a little bit low, but tell us a little bit more about this new state-of-the-art venue at Emirates Golf Club.
Yeah, well, it should be really good. If anyone came the first year, we built a tent at the base of the Burj Khalifa in Burj Park, and that was a brilliant venue. You were very intimate, very close to the action, so you could see it really well. Last year was the opera, which was very spectacular. Like you said, it was a bit maybe not perfect for spectators, but it was still a really great event, and certainly the atmosphere there was great. And then this year we're going to build another glass show court at Emirates Golf Club, just near their iftar tent. And again, it will be a really great intimate experience for the spectators. They'll be close, they'll see the players, really be part of all the action.
Speaking of being part of the action, I believe this year we're going to be, I guess, a licensed event this year at the golf course. So it'll be a more of a fun atmosphere if we're moving from the opera, the quiet opera, maybe to more of a rowdier event at the golf course?
Yes. Well, being respectful of, obviously, the holy month and being very careful about making sure that we're respectful of tradition, yes, it will be a licensed venue and we will be looking to have a really engaging party atmosphere there. So,
in terms of players getting maybe involved with the fans, is there any player-fan engagement? Can fans come up and maybe see their favorite player, get an autograph, maybe get a selfie with any of these people?
We're certainly going to be organising some selfies and some autograph sessions, definitely. And the players, I have to say, are fantastic to deal with. They're very unassuming and they're very accommodating. So we've actually got, I've organised some school clinics on the first three mornings. So we're going to have some school kids from around town having a clinic and then actually meeting some of the players. And also we've got some community clinics on the semi-finals and finals day, which is the 8th and the 9th of June. If you are interested in being part of that, you just need to go to our Facebook page, which is PSA Dubai Finals. There's all the information about the iftar deals, but also information about entering that competition to see if you actually can get to meet and have a game, or at least a short game, with some of the players, which is really good.
And we have three squash players sitting around this table, and we're all actually quite horrible at it. But
I'm disappointed. None of you qualified.
But there's always next year, Sarah. There's always next year. Dream big, right? Maybe we'll land on the stars. But you're in touch with the racket sports here in Dubai and in the UAE. What do you think the state of squash is at the youth level here in the UAE? Do you see it growing year after year, or do you see it as a stagnant thing, or is it just more the pros come in once a year and then we say goodbye to squash? Do you think it is something that is there a youth movement in squash out here in Dubai?
Well, certainly one of the objectives of Dubai Sports Council when they bring events here is to try and generate or create a legacy program. And some of those legacy programs have been very successful. For example, with badminton, and we started Shuttle Time Dubai, and that's still going. That event has now finished. Obviously, that four-year cycle is over, but the Shuttle Time is still going very, very well. Table tennis, there was the same thing. Tennis, we always work on the legacy. And I think with squash, the same thing is happening. It's about bringing the profile back up. That's why we're trying to engage with school kids this year as well. I've got a long background in sport development, and I think one of the things that's really critical is kids can't be what they can't see. So if they meet players like that, then they suddenly realise that these are just normal people who've worked hard. You know, they don't have some special superpower that they were born with that you don't have. And then they see that, you know, and also people from the region. So it's fantastic that we've got the Egyptian players who play so well, because the kids in this region can see it and go, they're Arabs. They're doing brilliantly. They're the best in the world. We can do that too. So I think it is having an effect. I'm not sure that we, you know, got back to the halcyon days of squash probably in the 80s when it was hugely popular everywhere, but it's certainly, I think, it's back on the rise again.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we had some of the representatives of the Squash Association with us here this time last year ahead of the final stand at Dubai Opera, and they were talking about, you know, one of the things that is the accusation that is levelled against them more often than not is lack of facilities and lack of courts around town. And they stood there and said, no, that is not the case. There are a huge amount of courts out there. Yep. It's the education, it's the knowledge of where being able to get onto those courts themselves.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard reports that there's something like 2,000 courts in the region, which is fantastic. But yes, it's getting access to those courts. It's getting access to the coaching. It's making sure that, you know, it's actually just igniting that fire in kids that they actually want to play. So that's why we're really hoping parents will take advantage of these great deals we've got this week with tickets and come down and show their kids this great sport, and particularly if they're players too, and then get the kids involved. Because once they've seen it and they see how much fun it is and how, you know, you can play squash and enjoy it at any level, no disrespect, guys, but, you know, living proof. But you can, and so it's really good. You just need to light that fire that they see this game and they think, wow, this is something I would really like doing. So
I know we mentioned the Commonwealth Games a little earlier on, and kudos to them for including squash into the finals down there on the Gold Coast this year. They didn't have tennis, but they did have squash, and that's been one of the big debates, isn't it, in the past, is why squash, which is such a global sport, is not at the Olympics.
Yeah, that's a big debate, and I don't know why. I mean, I think there's an awful lot to do with the bidding process and how that's gone on. Obviously, we all just, as squash fans, hope that that will be rectified soon and that it will get its rightful place in the Olympics, because it certainly should be there. And it's such a great sport to watch, and it's tailor-made for spectating, because, you know, you're just in one area. It's an easy sport to put on. Mm. So I did want to mention just a couple of other people that are competing this week, though. We've got all the tremendous, strong Egyptians, but we've also got people like Simon Rosner from Germany, who's been here the last 2 years, made semi-finals last year. He won a title this year. He's been one of the few to break through the Egyptian stranglehold. And then, of course, we've got the amazing Miguel Rodriguez. Sorry, my turn to be like you, Russ. Sorry.
Good luck.
Do you want to go that one for me? And now, he was here in 2016, and they call him the cannonball. He's crazy. His signature move is a full-length dive along the court. He's a fantastic player. He was in about 14th place, so we weren't even looking at him to qualify. And then he won the last event, the British Open in Hull. First Colombian to ever win a World Series title. Like, that was just fantastic. So he's back, so he'll be amazing to watch. And then, of course, we've got Gregory Gaultier, who won here in 2016. Again, one of the seniors on the tour, but just, you can never underestimate Greg.
Also a little bit of a temper on him, and he's quite excitable on court. I remember watching him last year, and as you say, gives good spectator value, Tom.
Oh, yeah, he's amazing. You've got to watch Miguel.
You mentioned about the fact that we've got a replacement in for the Al-Shabaghi, and that's good news for the English, because they get to fly the flag in the men's division, as they do in the women's division as well.
Oh, goodness, yeah. Well, they've got Laura Massaro, former world number one, former world champion. She's amazing, won the last 2 years here, so came from behind. I mean, everyone had their money on Noor El-Shabini last year. Laura just has incredible tenacity, incredible skills. She just got in there and she's like, nope, this is mine, and won. So I'm really looking forward to seeing her in action again. And also Sarah Jane Perry's back. She was here last year, a big 6-foot English girl. Can't underestimate her. And Kamisa May, she hasn't had as good a season this year as she did last year. Last year she was really dominant. But again, a player never to underestimate. So we've got a really nice mix of different nationalities. So there's lots of people to come and support, and just some spectacular players.
Sarah, you mentioned Laura's won here the last previous 2 years. Do you find in the world of squash that players like a certain court, or they like playing in a certain town? They play a little bit better in certain areas?
I think they probably all have their favourites. It's a bit like tennis and anything else. They might feel more at home on a certain court, although we keep changing the courts, so they can't say that here.
Yeah. it must be their PR director. They like playing, right?
Thank you, of course. Yeah, no, I think it's because it's the final event of the season for them too. You know, they've made it. They don't get points out of this, so they can put it all on the line here, and that's why it's really exciting too. No one's conserving, no one's kind of holding back for the next event or anything like that. This is their season ending. It's probably one of their bigger prize pools. They've qualified to come here. They know they're going to be up against top eight in the world, and every round there's no easy games here at all. They have to put everything out there, and they do, and that's why it's spectacular to watch.
I'm sure there is a little cash incentive as well at the end of a long season. But in terms of convincing the players to come to Dubai for that season ender, is that a no-brainer as well? Do they enjoy playing here?
Yep. We don't have to do any work for that one. They and a lot of them say, you know, they start their season actually aiming for Dubai. They enjoy the experience here. They've enjoyed the way we treat them, the way we look after them. And it's a season ender, so it's a really nice way to finish. Some of them tack a little holiday on to the end, which is nice for them too. So,
question for you, and trying to sort of picture it in my mind as well. So, as you said, the court's travelled. It's travelled well, as has the arena itself. Gets a new home this year, Emirates Golf Club. So I'm thinking outdoors. I'm also thinking, hang on, it's June. It's summer. It's hot as well. How do you combat the two?
It's all indoors. We build a massive big tent, as we're good at doing in Dubai, and it's all air-conditioned. It's really comfortable for the spectators and the players. Obviously, we wouldn't do that to them. Do you remember in 2016 we did a demonstration glass court in front of the Burj, and it looked fabulous.
It's
amazing,
Mohamed
Al-Shabaghi and then 8-time world champion Nicole David come and play. It looked amazing, but obviously you can't do that to them in June. It's the season ender. It's always going to be this time of year, so we have to go inside. But it does make it a really exciting experience for the players and for the spectators. And obviously we have all the great lighting, so it's all kind of purple and blue and some entertainment. So it's a good, fun time, day out.
For those listening out there at the moment, obviously we've talked a lot about the players themselves, but from a spectator experience point of view, we've talked about the different nationalities there, so paint your face up with your national colours, wear your national colours, bring your flags down, get involved in that. But from a spectator's point of view, I mean, are you quite close to the action? Are you involved in the action as well?
Yeah, well, it's quite a small tent. It's a bit like the one the first year that we had. I think our capacity is about 700, I think. I'm sorry if I'm wrong on that one, but yeah, so it's quite and it's obviously sloped, so you know, you've got a really good view from wherever you want to be. If you want to take a side court seat or a front court seat, you can pay for different areas, but it is a great experience. You know, you're really involved in it, and because we darken all the spectator area, it's kind of an intense experience. It's like that's all you're focusing on, so
loads to look forward to. It is down at the Emirates Golf Club as well. Are tickets on sale? And if so, can people book in advance?
Yes, definitely. Go onto Platinum List. We're on there. As I said, 75 dirhams a day for the first couple of days, and I think it's then 110 for finals. So very, very reasonable and fantastic action for what you're paying for. And if you are interested in the Iftar deals, go onto our Facebook page, PSA Dubai Finals, and have a look at that and book that through Emirates Golf Club. But yeah, we're really hoping to see a lot of people down there and enjoying it. There's not a lot else you can do in the heat, but you can come down and watch some fantastic squash.
And this is an event that is taking place during the holy month of Ramadan, and you're taking that into consideration as well in terms of the timings of the games and the scheduling.
That's right, and that's why there's a gap for Iftar. Last year we had quite a substantial gap. It didn't work so well for the players, so this year we'll start at 8 o'clock. So some of our players are obviously Muslim, so we accommodate them in that scheduling. But everyone can enjoy their iftar and then come along and enjoy the evening.
One glaring hole in that player lineup at the moment, and I'm going to turn to
Tom Urquhart.
That's long gone. Don't worry about that with the old grey hair and the dodgy knees. That's well behind the sell-by date. But no Americans on there. Why is that? Is it a big game in the States or not?
No, racquetball. Racquetball rings king when it comes to that type of court game right now. So.
We did have Amanda Sobey last year, I believe, first year or last year, who was one of our few American representatives. She still did pretty well this year, but I think she missed out on qualification by
Olivia Blatchford, 14th in the world.
Places, yeah. So Olivia was ahead of Amanda this year, and then Amanda came in a bit further down. But I think she's had some injury issues as well. But no, it's not so big with the Americans.
But there is an opportunity in the men's division there, you know, for representation.
Yeah, I think my ship has sailed here, Tommy.
Not at all, mate.
I'll hold on to the microphone.
Good to have Sarah Marks with us here. Sarah, just a final reminder to all those listening in. If they have been before, they know what the deal is. If they have not been before, and they'd like to come on down and find out more, best way to keep in touch, best way to find out more details, buy your tickets, best way to do that?
Tickets on Platinum List, and go to our Facebook page, PSA Dubai Finals. All the details are there. If you need something else that's not on the page, just message us through the page and we'll get back to you straight away. But we start Tuesday the 5th. First 3 days are round robins, so 8 matches a day. And then we have the semi-finals on the 8th, and then the finals on the 9th. They'll both start at 8 p.m.
Morning session, evening session, is that right? Sorry,
3 p.m. session. 3 p.m. session, 4 matches. 8 p.m. session, another 4 matches. So a good deal, even if you can't get down till after work or after iftar, you still see 4 great matches. So it's not like you've missed out and you're only going to get 1.5. So you'll get good action.
Well, it's perfectly with Ramadan hours as well. A lot of people are taking Ramadan hours at the moment. So come on down and enjoy it. Sarah, bless you. Thanks for you for coming on down and enjoy it and being with us here today.
Thanks, guys. I look forward to seeing you in the qualification list next year.
We will do our damnedest. That's all we can say. Thanks very much indeed to Sarah Marks, PR and Media Manager of the forthcoming event. It is the ATCO PSA Dubai World Squash Series Finals. Tickets are on sale. Get yourself onto Platinum List and find out more. We'll post up all those details for you very, very shortly. You're listening to Dubai I-103.8. You are listening to The Grill.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill in association with Barasti Superdome, bringing the football stadium to you this summer.
So China have taken an early lead against Thailand. It's half-time in that international friendly ahead of the World Cup. Lots of games to look forward to a little later on. 8:15 this evening, England against Nigeria, with the Nigerian football shirts having sold out within a couple of hours, having been unveiled just a few days ago. Republic of Ireland also in action against the USA. That one, for some reason, is kicking off at 8 minutes past 11 o'clock this evening. I don't know if that's a typo or just very, very precise indeed, but it is the Republic of Ireland against the USA kicking off at 8 minutes past 11 this evening. Austria against Germany, Sweden against Denmark, Montenegro against Slovenia. Lots of games to look forward to a little later on. Let's go to Mauricio Pochettino now. He has been linked with the job at Real Madrid. He's been questioned about it as well. His thoughts?
No, I am ready now for go to the to take a lunch with my friends. Sorry for a lot of people. My English is not great, but I am ready and exciting to come back to London to. I think our project is so exciting. I am here now. The most important is the book. And of course, I understand all the rumors around the world, but that is our life. That is the sport that we chose to stay. That is the passion that translates to everyone. Look, I am so happy. I am so excited. I signed a new contract 10 days ago. What is going to happen tomorrow? I don't know. But like always, I tell you, football is football. Football is going to put you in your place always. I think, like I explained before in Spanish, that may be difficult. I don't know if you speak Spanish. No. I think the most important is to enjoy day by day. Life is very short, and we need to spend the day thinking in enjoy life, not thinking too much or be worried about what is going to happen tomorrow. I am so happy in Tottenham. I am so proud that Tottenham showed the commitment and trust in the way that Daniel Levy showed me 10 days ago. And of course, yeah, we have a lot of dreams, we have a lot of objectives, but for me the most important now is to enjoy today. And of course, all that happened in the last few hours increase the expectation about the book, about our book. But what I can tell you that I am so happy in London.
But this is the 13-time European champions. It's arguably the biggest club in the world. Surely it would be impossible for you to turn them down. Nobody says no to Real Madrid.
For you, it's impossible. You think, yeah, but you are not me.
Those are the thoughts of Maurizio Pochettino. So he says he's not going. Let's wait and see. Watch this space. What we can tell you is there's live action at Roland Garros. The sun is shining down there. It's not up at Headingley where it is raining. No play in the second day of the test match between England and Pakistan until at least 4:45 local time here in the UAE. We'll try and get more details on that one for you a little later on. In the meantime, though, there is action down at Roland Garros. Maria Sharapova was on the Philippe Chatrier court just a few moments ago. Let's see if she's still there. Ross Christ?
No, she's not, but she's leaving the victory. She's won 6-2, 6-1 over Carolina Pliskova, the Czech. She's dropped the sixth seed out of the tournament. It sounds weird saying Maria Sharapova is the 28th seed ranked in this tournament, but yeah, she is victorious handling the Czech, Carolina Pliskova, 6-2, 6-1. And elsewhere in the third round, we have the number one seed, Rafael Nadal, taking on Frenchman Richard Gasquet. That is about to get underway shortly, so we'll keep you up to date when this tennis racket starts swinging, Tommy.
Thank you very much indeed. Let's go down to court 18, where Sloane Stephens has gone through. She beat her Italian opponent, Giorgi, by 2-1. It went to 8-6 in the final deciding set between those two. So the 10th seed from America goes through. Replaced on court by Schwartzman and Coric. They are slugging it out in the first set down there. 4-3 in that one. That's the latest there. Over on court 18, Simona Halep and Petkovic is the game that finishes up on that particular court a little later on. We've also got action for the men's doubles, the men's and the mixed doubles as well. But there is plenty of singles in action underway. What's happening with Zverev? Let's find out from CVR.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is Zverev taking on the South African Kevin Anderson, and it's a 1-0 to the South African. He took the first set 6-1. The second set very tight. It's currently going on serve. Zverev leading that one 6-5. But a game that might interest you a little bit more is, of course, Carl Embun is taking on the Italian Fognini, and it's two sets all. It's currently 4-3 in the fifth set, and that is going on serve. As Ross said, Rafael Nadal is taking on Richard Gasquet. That game is going to be kicking off anytime soon. In the other men's singles round of 32, it's Schwartzman, the Argentinian, up against Coric, the Croatian, and that is 4-4 in the first set.
Sharapova, Khachanov, Mirga Ruth are all through already today, along with Kontaveit, who's beaten Kvitova just a few moments ago over in round three of the women's singles tournament. That's what's happening over in Roland Garros. As I say, we'll keep an eye on that one, including that thriller over on the Suzanne Lenglen court, where the 16th seed from the United Kingdom, Carl Edmund, takes on the 18th seed from Italy, Fabio Fognini. It's gone to the fifth. It's going with serve in that one. As I said, we'll keep an eye on that for you. One final little stop off. Let's go to Twickenham and see what the latest result is from the final stop on the HSBC World Series of Rugby Sevens.
Yeah, Tom, what I can tell you is Ireland have just finished against Spain. Ireland beating Spain 38 points to 10. The game before that, South Africa beating Canada 17-7. And then, of course, the big surprise of the afternoon is Russia beating Samoa. That one 29-17. Coming up, Australia take on Wales. Then New Zealand take on Argentina. Fiji take on Scotland. Kenya take on France. And then your beloved England takes on Rot's beloved USA.
That's a good one to look forward to a little later on in proceedings. Try and get on the big screen down here at Barasti to watch that one. Ross just has brought to my attention some breaking news, or certain breaking rumours here in the region. We know that Henk Ten Cate has left Al Jazeera, the manager of Al Jazeera. He left a couple of weeks ago at the end of the season. Lots of question marks as to who will be his successor. A few names doing the rounds, but one that's risen to the top at the moment is the former Ajax manager Marcel Kaiser. He's a name that a lot of people are talking about at the moment. So will the capital club go Dutch again remains to be seen. Let's go to the United States of America. We've got the man of the moment with us here today. Ross Crist is alongside us to walk us through the NBA finals and, of course, all other action. And I want to start off with a question. I'm going to play devil's advocate on this one because interested in the Eastern and Western Conference playoffs and making our way into the finals again this year. My interest grows year on year in all things NBA. I won't for a moment claim to know what's going on and who's going on, etc. But as I said, interest has been peaked. Interest, though, has plateaued a little, given the fact who's made it through to the finals. A little bit of deja vu.
Four times coming, huh?
Is that good for the sport?
It's good if you're a Cleveland Cavalier or you're a Golden State Warrior. It depends. There's
two sides
to this coin.
As a marketer of basketball worldwide?
You know, if you're trying to pick up new fans, probably it's not the best thing for the sport. But this is not something that's new to the sport. Yeah. This has happened in the 70s with the Boston Celtics and Los Angeles Lakers. This happened in the 90s with Chicago Bulls making it to the finals out of the East. Every single year Michael Jordan was playing at the peak. So this is nothing abnormal for the NBA. We saw it with the Montreal Canadiens and the NHL. Throughout the whole entire 70s, winning the Stanley Cup. So, you know, if people get upset with this repeat, then go out, get a roster, get a team, get a coach that can beat these two teams. It's not LeBron James's fault and Kevin Durant's fault that they keep winning year after year.
Ross, just a question. We touched on F1 maybe becoming a little bit too predictive and a little bit boring, but is an NBA getting to the state now that if you're a rich owner, you go out and you buy three key players, you're kind of guaranteed to be in the finals? We saw this when LeBron moved to Miami Heat. All of a sudden, him and Dwayne Wade moved from the Heat. They moved to the Cavs. All of a sudden, the Cavs are now the dominant team. Golden State Warrior, obviously, they had Steve Curry. They now get Kevin Durant in, and they start dominating the league. So what do the Houston Rockets need? They need one more guy there, and could they be the dominating team next season?
What the Golden State Warriors did is they went out and they essentially bought a super team, is what you just said there, and that somehow gelled. But how they still had their core, they still had, they still had Stephen Curry, they had Klay Thompson, they built everything around those two guys, you know. And then they had Draymond Green, who came out and played the power forward position. Then they went out and they bet Kevin Durant, and a lot of people said, "Why are you adding him into the mix? This is a team that's already clicking." But it ended up working. But then you look at other teams that done exactly what you said, Carl. They followed that type of model where the owner goes out and they buy big name players. Oklahoma City Thunder, they went out, they got Carmelo Anthony, they got Paul George this year, they get boomed out of the playoffs, they didn't perform that well. Houston Rockets, they went out, they got Chris Paul in free agency, he comes over from Los Angeles. This might be a different story if Chris Paul doesn't get injured in game four. He missed the last two games of the series, and he was hands down the best player on the court, in my opinion, on the hardwood for the West in that conference finals. But yeah, I don't totally buy into that, because you look what the Cleveland Cavaliers did this year. Cleveland Cavaliers went out, they got Dwayne Wade. LeBron James' best friend. They won out. They got Isaiah Thomas. They got three bona fide superstars to go along with LeBron James and Kevin Love. And guess what? At the All-Star break, they were sitting in second place. There was some uncertainty in Cleveland. And what did they do? They shipped everyone away. They traded Dwayne Wade back to Miami. They traded Isaiah Thomas out to the Los Angeles Lakers. So they got rid of some of these guys. And basically, it's still LeBron James. It's just the LeBron James show in Cleveland. And he keeps marching on. Of course, he has an all-star point guard, an all-star power forward in Kevin Love. But that's not really a super team. It is LeBron James versus a super team currently in this NBA Finals.
But now, quick question. Let's, for argument's sake, say LeBron James moves to the Lakers next season. And he chooses one player to go with him. Do we see the Lakers in a playoff position?
I think any team that has LeBron James is in the playoffs currently. Any team that has a man...
You've just answered my question.
Any team that has a man that puts up in the NBA Finals, quite possibly the hardest game of the season, that puts up 48 minutes, plays every single minute, and gets you 50 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, 1 steal. He is playing like Superman. It's just simply amazing what he's able to do in his early 30s, year after year, in his 15th season for this Cleveland Cavaliers team. He literally puts this whole entire team on his back, night in, night out, throughout the duration of these playoffs. It doesn't matter if it's game one or it's a game seven. He just plays out of his shoes, and it's nothing you can do to stop him. You can only can hope to contain the players around him, which is what the Golden State Warriors did. Now, in this Game 1 matchup, we saw an intriguing matchup coming into this one, Carl. These two teams were going at it. I know it's their fourth year meeting in a row. However, the Warriors were the heaviest favorite in a Game 1 series in 12 years' time. You have to go all the way back to when Allen Iverson was playing with the Philadelphia 76ers going against Kobe Bryant's Los Angeles Lakers to find a bigger underdog in this one. In that game one, actually, Philadelphia 76ers won. Cleveland Cavaliers, they had their shot in this game. At the end of regulation, score was tied. 3 seconds left to go. They're shooting free throws. The ball gets to J.R. Smith on the rebound, and J.R. Smith looks like he thinks that the Cavaliers have the lead, and he dribbles out the clock. I know it kind of sounds a little bit challenging when I say that on air, but basically he held on to the ball thinking that his team was winning when in fact the score was tied. Everyone in the whole entire arena knew it. The opposing team knew it. The Cleveland Cavaliers knew it. LeBron James knew it. He scolded his teammate. Everyone watching at home was probably yelling at their TVs if they're a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. Everyone was cheering if you're a Golden State Warriors fan. But the whole entire time of this 124-114 loss, J.R. Smith said he knew the score was tied.
George shot the free throw. I got the rebound. We were tied ball game. We had a timeout. And I was trying to get enough space because I obviously was standing right there. Trying to get enough space to bring it out to get it, maybe get a shot off. And then I looked over at Bron. He looked like he was trying to call a timeout, so I just stopped. And then the game was over.
You knew you were tied. You didn't think you were leading?
No, I seen it. I knew it was tied. It's just, I thought he was going to call a timeout because I got the rebound. I'm pretty sure everybody didn't think I was going to shoot over KD right there. So.
On the replay, it looked like you said to LeBron, I thought we were ahead.
If I thought we were ahead, then I would have just held on to the ball that fouled me. But clearly that wasn't the case. Yeah, I mean, I saw KD standing right next to me. He already had 4 blocks, so I wasn't about to be the fifth.
I don't know if I've ever heard a bigger liar in sports than that post-game interview with J.R. Smith. Poor guy, you have to feel for him throughout the duration of his career. He's made a lot of boneheaded plays. He's gotten in trouble for doing things on the court. He's been alleged for sending gang signs on the court. He's done plenty of technicals in his day. He's done a lot of boneheaded things, but I think this tops it off for being the biggest bonehead on the court. You hope that he can pull it together because you don't want someone's career to be remembered in the biggest game of the final where you had a blunder. LeBron James, throughout his whole entire career, has been nothing but pleasant to the media. He always gives a great interview. I'll tell you what, he was not happy when he was getting answers to questions about J.R. Smith after this game.
You know, we got to move on. I mean, this game is it's over and done with. We got our opportunities, you know, and I would never give up on J.R. It's not my MO. I don't give up on any of my players, so any of my teammates. So I don't think that even needs to be said.
There's still confusion about whether J.R. thought the game was tied or whether he thought you guys were ahead. From where you stood on the court and from talking to him after the play, What's your reaction to it? What's your version?
What do you mean, what's my version?
Well, did he think that the game was tied, or did he think that you guys had it salted away?
How do I know that?
Or did you discuss it at all with him at the end of the play?
No. They asked me if I talked to JR about it. I said no already. I knew it was a tie game. We was down one. George Hill went up. He made the first one. We got the offensive rebound. You know, I thought we were all aware of what was going on. That's my view. So I don't know what JR was thinking. I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
I was just trying to see if you knew exactly what his state of mind was. Did he think that you guys had it won, or did he think he was trying to make a play? Not sure.
What do you mean, I'm not sure? No, I don't know his state of mind.
Did you know if he knew the score?
Thank you.
I followed LeBron James's career since he came out of St. Vincent, St. Mary out of Akron, Ohio, and I think that was quite possibly his most contrite interview. I've never seen him stand up at the interview. I've never seen him seen so short, because for a man that has a million microphones in his face more than anyone else on planet Earth besides maybe Cristiano Ronaldo or Messi, he always is polite and he always gives you a great question. He's articulate, but boy, you could see his blood was boiling there, wasn't it?
There's only so many times you can say I don't know, though, isn't there? Yeah.
Well, he was protecting his teammate. He knew what it was. His teammate blew the game. He essentially blew the game for him, because then when he got to overtime, it was all Golden State Warriors. The offensive onslaught, the Cavaliers didn't have the defense to stop them, and they ended up winning game one. However, the Cavs could have stole it. If you could steal one out there, that would have been a big, big pickup for them. Get the momentum in the series. Who knows? One man who's very, very happy about J.R. Smith's blunder is Mr. Draymond Green, who says it's always good to be lucky sometimes.
Sometimes we need a little luck. It's, you know, it's good to be lucky sometimes. So I'll take you know, I think, you know, where he got the rebound, he probably could have laid it up. But nonetheless, you know, that's a part of the game. You know, being locked in, and, I mean, you got to know the score. That's just kind of basketball. Like, you got to know if you're winning or losing or tie. So, you know, we'll take it, and you know, sometimes it's good to be a little lucky. So, hey, Steve, cool. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Draymond Green
seems to be laughing. That
he was laughing the whole way through it. Boy, I'll tell you what, I would not want to sit next to J.R. Smith on the flight home. That would be an awkward, awkward seat on the plane. Because that's probably the most awkward seat on the planet right now. But gentlemen, you got the Golden State Warriors. They are the heavy favorites coming into this finals. I told you they're the heaviest favorites in 12 years over these Cleveland Cavaliers. Cavaliers, LeBron James, they had LeBron James on this roster. Can they get a game? I think they can. They've proven that they can make this a series. They've proven that they can play basketball and they can stick with this four-headed monster of the Golden State Warriors. Kevin Love put up 21 points. LeBron James put up 51 points. Kevin Love's getting a ton of rebounds right now. So it's going to come down to game two. That's our next game. You're going to have to get up early if you guys want to listen to this one. 4 a.m. local time. The Cavaliers will tip off against the Golden State Warriors. LeBron James and company looking to even the playing field at the Oracle Arena out in the West Coast. If you want to fly out there right now, there's 981 tickets available for as low as $435. That's Tom Urquhart money if I've ever heard it.
I'll take a handful. Give me a fistful. Interesting, but so for those not in the know, for those that are tuning in for the first time and saying I'm getting into this series, etc., is there a rest day, or is it a game every single day in the finals?
No, you get a rest day, and so it's going to be two games out in the Bay Area. Then they're going to come back to the queue. They're going to come up to northeastern Ohio, which is a pleasure, just a treat. Cleveland's beautiful this time of year. Get two games there, then one and one. So if it makes it to seven games, and guess what, guys? If this matchup has proven anything in the past, I could see this one going to seven games. I know that the Warriors are heavy favorites and everything like that, but the Cavaliers have proven that they can play some defense with them.
Surely you got to favor the Golden State Warriors on home court. So let's say two games in the Bay Area, as you've just said, they go 3-0 up in the series. Ross, it's got to be hard to come back from that.
Well, it would be 2-0 up, because they're up 1-0 right now. So if they win tonight's game, they'd be up 2-0. Then they go to Cleveland. So, yeah, if you get down to 3-0 in the finals, that is a no-no in American sports. It's very, very hard to do. I mean, it's just with your backs against the wall. But both of these teams have proven that they can play with their backs against the wall. Both of these teams also know each other. It was really interesting to see that there's no love lost between these teams. Draymond Green, with about 20 seconds to go, pulled down a rebound and got fouled, and he looked at Perkins on the bench. He kind of waved him, kind of blew him a little bit of a kiss. These teams really, really don't like each other. It's going to make for an exciting next couple games here in the series.
Do we need to see the same happen that happened in the playoff against the Celtics, where everybody's talking LeBron, but we actually saw that Cleveland became a better team when the rest of the guys around LeBron started playing and actually took a lot of pressure off him? Yeah, we're talking about him scoring 50 points a game, but actually taking a bit of pressure off him, getting the rest of the guys kind of performing around him.
One more time, Carl. Sorry about that. Come at me one more time.
Go again. Replay.
No, I'm just saying, for Cleveland to kind of get back in the series, do we really need to see his other teammates really start performing? Is this the key? Because in the playoffs against the Celtics, it seemed every time the rest of the team started contributing, taking a bit of pressure off LeBron, they seemed to win the games.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Carl. Sorry about that. I got distracted by Nadal going up 2-0 over Gasquet here in the first round.
Busting it.
But yeah, he's doing well here. But you're exactly right. You need some of these other role players to step up. You need a Kyle Korver. You need a J.R. Smith. You need someone, because it is going to be, you know, LeBron James is going to get his points, right? You need Kevin Love. Or he's going to get his points. Kyle Korver or J.R. Smith. If J.R. Smith wants everyone in the whole entire world to forget J.R. Smith's name, he needs to come back out and put up 15 points. Because right now, even if you don't follow the game of basketball, you know nothing about the NBA Finals, you know that there's one bonehead in Cleveland right now, and his name is J.R. Smith, because he completely ruined it. He ruined the chance for the Cleveland Cavaliers to win this first game. So he needs to come back in the second game and hopefully put up some points to help LeBron James and company.
The question to Ross Crist is, what else is going on in the world of U.S. sport? We'll have that in just a few moments' time for you. Just want to break away very quickly and head over to France. Let's go over to Paris, the capital of France, and let's get over to the game between the 18th and the 16th seed. It is all over, and it looks like it is going the way, it has gone the way of the Italians. So let's get a final score from CBR.
Yeah, Tommy, what I can tell you is that Fabio Fognini has broken Carl Edmond in the final game of that set, broken his serve, and what I can tell you is he won that set 6-4 in the fifth, so he goes through, and bad news for all British fans there. Carl Edmond has now exited the French Open at Roland Garros. In other news, what I can tell you is Zverev has taken the second set in his game against Kevin Anderson. Kevin Anderson taking that first set on court one, of course, 6-1, losing the second one 7-6. It's still 0-0 in the third set.
Missed opportunity for GB's Carl Edmond, but Italy's Fabio Fognini goes into the last 16, where he will play the winner of Marin Cilic's third round meeting with Steve Johnson, which is underway at the moment. We'll keep an eye on that one for you.
Tom, I know you always glued to the television screen on the weekend. I must say, I was rather impressed with a certain Novak Djokovic yesterday. Struggled a little bit, broke a few rackets, but really seems to be finding a bit of form.
We'll keep an eye on that one. We'll hear from Novak in the final hour of the show. Not before, though, we've gone back to Ross Crist. Tell us more.
Well, we're going to head back, and I'm going to head to the White House, guys. I don't want to scare you here. All right, this is maybe the first time
you've got the call, have you?
I've got the
call. You've got the nod, have you?
Old Donnie's asking me to come in and relieve him of duties.
What department have you got?
Yeah.
State?
Yeah,
security?
Nothing like
sport?
That.
Sport?
Very, very rarely do we like to see politics and sport interact, but this week they did. All right, because I'm going to tell you about a presidential pardon that happened this week. If I say the name Jack Johnson to you, does that ring any bells, gentlemen? Anyone?
Not from a sporting point of view.
More from a music point of view.
Music point of view, yeah. The Hawaiian singer. No, we're not. We're going to stick with the sporting point of view. Jack Johnson was the first American heavyweight African-American boxer. And he had a heck of a career. Phenomenal player in the boxing game. He's one of the pioneers for black boxing in America. However, in 1912, Johnson was arrested on the grounds of having a relationship with Lucille Cameron, which at the time violated what was called the Mann Act, which was basically saying an African American and a Caucasian could not be in certain areas together at certain times. And he got arrested for that, and he got thrown in jail. And this tarnished his legacy, has tarnished his record, and many things about him were said when he was in jail. And of course, this was just something racial, something horrible. So this past week, Johnson's family posthumously were invited to the White House by President Donald Trump, and heavyweight champion boxer Deontay Wilder, and Sylvester Stallone, of all people, who made the movie Apollo's Creed, loosely based on Jack Johnson's life, were all sent to the White House for a presidential pardon.
Jack Johnson was the first black heavyweight champion, and he was the heavyweight champion for many years. He was pretty much unbeatable. In light of these facts and in recognition of his historical athletic achievements and the contributions to society, he really represented something that was both very beautiful and very terrible at the same time. I believe that Jack Johnson is a very worthy person to receive a full pardon, and in this case, a posthumous pardon.
I want to thank you, Mr. President. It's incredible that you've done this, because it's one thing. I've been so blessed with the Rocky situation and playing that character. And actually, when I was writing it, I'm thinking about inspirations for this Apollo Creed, and that was Jack Johnson, his bigger-than-life, incredible character, and who was, you know, treated so unfairly. His prime was taken away, but somehow he still managed to persevere and kept a smile on his face, and he's truly an inspirational character. So this has been a long time coming. Of course, Linda, thank you very much. It was so amazing. Probably I don't know how many blood relatives are left, but you're like the one that really, really fought for him, and I appreciate that. So it's an honor to take kind of a fictional character like Rocky and do something in the world of reality, and thank you for making that happen. And punching Jack.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.